Hey, everybody, and welcome to Back to School. This is Kathy Wells, and this is where learning and liberty meet. And tonight I'm going to be talking to you about Prussia. And Prussia, for all I knew, was somewhere near Russia because they kind of sounded the same. And the first place I heard about Prussia was John Taylor Gatto's book, which I've mentioned over and over again, but I will plug again, The Underground History of American Education. It is free online. I'm a book person, so I have a copy that I procured for the very cheap price of, I think, $35. And they can run up to 100, so yay me. All right, so this is what I've been noticing. You know, I just did a gun control podcast not too long ago, and I want to do another one, actually. I want to do one on the history of gun control, like with Hitler and the Russian Revolution, and I think it was the Stasi, wasn't that the Italian police under Mussolini? But I want to talk to people about gun control because I think people are kind of clueless. But what I've been noticing is on these debates, which I rarely get into anymore on Facebook, because I've learned that there's really not a lot of point. And the reason there's not a lot of point is because people inevitably come back and argue using their emotions, their feelings, their experiences. You never hear the words law, constitution, liberty, rights, property, unalienable rights, organic law, common law, natural rights. You never hear any of that in these conversations. It's always, I worked somewhere once and this was bad and I feel bad for the children and this is what I think. So I really have discovered why this is now. And that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. Chapter 7 in Gatto's book is called The Prussian Connection. And, I didn't see that he has a little Encyclopedia Britannica entry here. Interesting. Oh, okay, I'll read this because, you know, he starts out his chapters with kind of interesting things. So here is his little snippet on Prussia from the Encyclopedia Britannica, the 11th edition. This is the Prussian fire discipline, all right? This is regarding the Prussian army. On approaching the enemy, the marching columns of Prussians wheeled in succession to the right or left, passed along the front of the enemy until the rear company had wheeled. Then the whole together wheeled into line facing the enemy. These movements brought the infantry into two long, well-closed lines. Parade ground precision obtained thanks to remorseless drilling. I went to A&M. This reminds me of the band when they talk about this. With this movement was bound up a fire discipline, more extraordinary than any perfection of maneuver. Peloton Fear was opened at 200 paces from the enemy and continued up to 30 paces when the line fell on with the bayonet. The possibility of this combination of fire and movement was the work of Leopold, who by sheer drill made the soldier a machine capable of delivering 5 volleys a minute. The special Prussian fire discipline gave an advantage of 5 shots to 2 against all opponents. Think about that. The bayonet attack, if the rolling volleys had done their work, was merely presenting the check for payment, as a German writer put it. All right, so who are the Prussians? Okay, Prussia is a German state. All right, so it's a part of what was Germany. And we're talking about how all this got started and how it affects our educational system was 1806. Napoleon, his soldiers beat the Prussians, and his soldiers were kind of amateurs, and the Prussians, you know, they were paid professional soldiers. So the Prussian country went a little nutty, and they decided that that was never going to happen to them again, and so they instituted the first compulsory schooling, because what they decided was they decided that they needed a universal conditioning from the bottom up, that they needed children who would grow up to be disciplined soldiers. They needed disciplined people. And so this is what they did. And their system came to be admired all around the world, but particularly in America. But I want to read to you a little bit first about more about their system, all right? And first, I want to point out to you that compulsory schooling is relatively new. In 1920, only 32% of U.S. children went past elementary school. Okay, and in Switzerland, at the time that this book was written, probably 15 years ago, there was only 23% of the student population in Switzerland going to high school, although they have the highest per capita income in the world. So the idea that you have to realize how deeply entrenched the idea is that we must go to school to get an, quote, education, and that that is the only way to make money. Okay, this is such a fallacy, and I've seen it in so many people's lives. You know, it's like they don't have that piece of paper, so they don't feel as smart as others. But anyway, we'll talk more about that in a minute. So I want to go back to this Prussian thing, all right? So, okay, let's just use, let me read you some examples. Okay, the Prussian mind had a clear idea of what centralized schooling should deliver. Now remember, this is a new concept. Number one, obedient soldiers to the army. Okay. Number two, obedient workers from mines, factories, and farms. Number three, well-subordinated civil servants trained in their function. Number four, well-subordinated clerks for industry. Number five, citizens who thought alike on mass issues. Number six, national uniformity in thought, word, and deed. So you see that there's a couple of pushes here to present a unified front, that everyone thinks the same, everyone does the same, all right? And then the other thing that you'll keep noticing is obedient, obedient, subordinated, subordinated, all right? There's a very clear understanding of this. Someone's in charge of me. And then the other thing that you'll see is the state. Who are we being subordinated to? Is it God? Is it the family? The two institutions, or the, well, the church and the family, you could say, the things that religious people would consider important. No. Who is the obedience for? It's for the state. Not for, now get this, okay, this is where it comes into play today. Not for the principles of law or liberty, but the state. Now, if the state well represents law and liberty, well and good. But what if in some country, in a far-off land somewhere, the government no longer represents, let's say, the founding principles behind its constitution, law and liberty? What if the government has become corrupted to such a point that it has forgotten its founding documents and its founding principles, but you still have people who are strictly statists because they did not differentiate between the founding principles and that which was right and good and that which has resulted? All right. I know we don't know any nations like that. Boy, that would be crazy. I'd hate to be there. All right, but here's the problem with the Prussian system. This is the problem. The Prussian system worked. It worked. Boy, I mean, you got results. And I don't know if you remember, I don't know if I've talked to you about this, but pragmatism was the first really American philosophy. First philosophy, I think it was William James, I think, came up with this philosophy. And I can't help but think it was right around the same time. He must have been influenced by the Prussians, because pragmatism basically says, hey, if it works, then let's do that. Whatever's expedient, whatever's fast, whatever gets us there, you know, not really a whole lot of emphasis on character. It's just, let's, you know, what works. And so the Prussian system worked. It was very pragmatic. And all over the world, people were writing home about it. They just loved the Prussian system. Horace Mann, who was this guy in Boston who really, really wanted compulsory schooling in America, loved the system, wrote home about it. There were all sorts of Americans who went overseas and, you know, just wrote home about how wonderful it was in France. Here is a quote from a man named Brownson. All right. And Brownson was a critic of Mann in Boston and his love for the Prussian system. This is what he said. Now, listen, there's always a voice of reason. You know, there's a voice of one crying aloud in the desert, right? There's always a remnant, to use some biblical analogies. Okay, this is what Brownson said. Where the whole tendency of education is to create obedience, all teachers must be pliant tools of government. Such a system of education is not inconsistent with the theory of Prussian society. but the thing is wholly inadmissible here. He further argued, according to our theory in America, the people are wiser than the government. Here, oh gosh, y'all, listen to this. Here in America, the people do not look to the government for light, for instruction, but the government looks to the people. The people give law to the government. And if you've ever wondered what happened to that principle and how we wound up in a universe where we say those things, but we know that that's not really the reality, this is how. It's through this education system, which I'm going to continue to explain to you and continue to see how it wiggled its way into our lives. And you have to understand, we just think like whatever we grew up in, well, that's all we know, because we don't anthropologically or historically know very much about our own cultures or others. So we just think, well, wasn't school always this way? And so it's very important to dispel those myths. No, school wasn't always this way. School was not always creating obedience to the state. School, it just wasn't. And gosh, I could go back and read a lot to you out of the McGuffey readers that talk about this. But okay, he continues to say, let's see. He concluded that to entrust government with the power of determining education, which our children shall receive, is entrusting our servant with the power of the master. The fundamental difference between the U.S. and Prussia has been overlooked by the Board of Education and its supporters. Really, could we just stop there? Need I say more? There is so much in those few little statements that this guy made. What else can you say? This is what we've gotten all backwards. This is the problem. This is why it's back to school, learning and liberty meet, because this is public education is where learning and liberty meet. If you want to change a generation of people, all you have to do is get in control of the public schools. And listen, let me just say, for a minute, just to exemplify what he was talking about Prussian society, women in Prussia were required to register at the onset of their menses because they were controlling population. Can you imagine how humiliating? Wow. I mean, it's no different than China, right? Which says you can only have, one kid, two kids, then you have to have an abortion. I think it's one child. Neato. Let's not even talk about the ramifications of what those kids' lives are going to be like growing up, gosh, with just one. All right. So going back to what I was saying before, there's so much in those couple of statements. I want the American people to regain the spirit that Brownson had when he was responding to Mann about Prussian education. I want us to regain our voice. I want us to say, excuse me, you have it a little backward. This isn't the way it's supposed to work. And this is how it is. Curriculum, and I was just, there's some curriculum in Texas and like all over the nation. It's called C, scope, like C as in cat and then scope. And it teaches things like the Boston Tea Party were terrorists, I guess, if you want to call it that. And that Allah is God is another name for the Hebrew God. So there's these things in here that are offensive to patriots and Christians. And there's some opposition to it, but my school district, Decatur, uses that curriculum. And you can't explain to people, like a mom might say, well, I don't notice anything wrong with that curriculum. I think it's okay. And the thing is you cannot, what's a good analogy to explain this? I mean, I don't know. You're leaving your kids somewhere, 40 hours a week, basically. And just because they don't come home and tell you what insidious little ideas and nuances were taught in their curriculum that they may not have even been aware of, sometimes the teachers may not even be aware of them because they're not teaching every single class. It's not a classical education where you have one teacher who, you know, teaches all the subjects. So she may not even, or he may not even be aware of how much of that insidious, values-destroying, anti-liberty, multicultural approach that is getting into the kids' heads. And so, you know, moms may say, well, we've got a good school district. We've got a good principal. Our teachers are Christians. it's built into the curriculum in ways that not even teachers might understand, and children certainly aren't going to pick up on it. So you have to take back the power of the book, I guess, not the power of the purse. We as a people have to say, you know what? I'm in charge of my kids' education. And I was chatting with a Facebook friend of mine who is a teacher, or who was a teacher, and now her kids are doing the C-Scope curriculum in public school, and she doesn't like it, and the teacher doesn't like it. But they have to do it. Why? Because they're not in charge. And this is what I'm saying. Like, if you are a Christian parent and you haven't pulled your kids out of public school yet, you should do so. You should think about doing so. You should plan on doing so. Because it would be like me saying, there's a known child molester down the street, okay? And I know that they say, you know, that they're reformed, but I don't have anybody else to watch my kids. So I'm going to send them there 40 hours a week and cross my fingers and hope for the best. I'm going to hope that they're okay. That is where the public education system is. And when I talk about reforming it, sometimes you have to tear things down first. Really, what we need to do is put control back in the hands of the parents. And that would be the best way to reform education, to say, you're not going to take another dime of state money or another dime of federal money. We're choosing the curriculum. We're going to choose the curriculum they used 100 years ago, and that's it. We're taking the power back. And see, this is what Brownson, to tie it all back in, was saying here. He was saying the Prussian system, it works fine if the goal is obedience. If the goal is to have the state in charge and the people subject to the state, but that is not the great American experiment. And think of this, y'all. This was like 1839. How quick, it's like, you know, in the Bible, how the Israelites were delivered out of Egypt and like a week later, they're all griping and you're just shaking your head going, why are they so, I mean, don't they remember? No, we don't. Didn't these Americans remember what America was founded on and the ideals? No, they didn't. Okay, let's see. I've got all kinds of notes in here, but one of the most important notes to talk about is Wilhelm the Great of Russia. He was a Prussian, right? And he was in charge right up until, I believe, and I think he talks about this in here, until Hitler. And so, you know, when we look at Hitler and we say, how could those people have suffered concentration camps, you know, right under their noses, because they had been educated in a Prussian system that was, let's go back and review, pardon me. The whole tendency was to create obedience. And to whom? Very important question. Not to God, to the state. They thought alike on mass issues. There was national uniformity in thought, word, and deed. There were well-subordinated civil servants trained in their functions. Everybody had, it was like a machine, see? And this absolutely defies the classical definition of education, which focuses on the humanity of humanity. Now, this Prussian system focused on the mechanism, like, just breaking everything down into its smallest part. You're a cog in a wheel. You go here and be happy. It reminds me of the Truman Show. I don't know if you ever saw that movie, but everyone had their role. I mean, that is a very good example. It was like a little microcosm, right? A bubble, biosphere. And everyone had their specific job. And that was what they were to do. There was not a lot of free thought allowed. You were to go and act that thing out. And this is what that reminds me of. Hmm. Oh yes, Frederick the Great of Prussia. Okay, and we imported this to America because, well, we just thought it was great. And he does mention in here a good book that I've heard about by Dr. Carol Quigley called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. I've heard that's a very good book. I would like to read it myself. Okay, now the early 19th century saw Prussian... Now, first of all, this was imported into different countries like France and then the United States imported this Prussian model. Remember, it was very different. Okay, the early 19th century saw Prussian state socialism, that's what that is, it's obedience to the state, arrive full-blown as the most dynamic force in world affairs, a powerful rival to industrial capitalism, with antagonisms sensed but not yet clearly defined. It was the moment of schooling never to surrender its grip on the throat of society once achieved. All right. So, and somebody told me the other day, speaking of grip on society and where this is going. Now, we know in Germany, homeschooling is not legal. And somebody told me the other day, I cannot verify this. I looked it up, but I couldn't find it, that in California, that you now have to use a state curriculum to homeschool and et cetera, et cetera. Now, what I want to do to you, what I want to talk to you about is something more specific about the schools, okay? And this is in, I think this is in Prussia. Yeah, okay, so there were three different types of schools. The first one was for one half of 1% of the students, the elite, if you will. It was called the Akademien Schulen. Okay, Schulen is school. That's where we get the word school, right? So like the academic school, where future policymakers learn to think strategically, contextually in wholes. They learned in wholes like WHOLES. They learned complex processes, useful knowledge, studied history, wrote copiously, argued often. Sound familiar? Sounds like classical education. Read deeply and mastered tasks of command. So the elite went to Akademien Schulen. Okay? The next level was Realschulen. And that was for engineers, architects, doctors, lawyers, civil servants. Now, they weren't the ruling class, but this would be like upper middle class, okay? Now, that was for 5 to 7.5% of all the students. So the top school, you have like half of a percent, 0.5. Then you have 5 to 7%, all right? They learn to be problem solvers. Now, the Volksschule was for everyone else. They were called the people schools. They heavily discounted reading because it produced dissatisfaction. Okay, if you want somebody to be happy with where they're at in life, don't teach them to read too much. And ironically, this is kind of where Pestalozzi, and I don't know if I've talked to you about him before, got his ideas on a non-literary pedagogy. A lot of our stuff is based on his stuff. He could barely read himself, because it wasn't necessary for the lower classes to read. If you do not see parallels in our country today, you're crazy. Where do the elites send their children? They send them to elite schools where the children of leaders go to learn to be leaders. Private schools, boarding schools, not even private schools, okay? Because private schools are more like the second level, the Realschulen. Obama doesn't send his kids to just any old school. He sends them somewhere to train them to be tomorrow's leaders, right? And then you have Realschulen, which would be like maybe homeschool, maybe private school. And then you have the people school, Volksschule, where they learn mostly nothing. And I'm sorry, I constantly am having to apologize to public school teachers. That's where you teach. It's not really your fault. You didn't know it going in. You don't understand the difference between the top, the second, and the bottom schools. But I'm here to tell you, that's where you teach. And this is what infuriates me. On one of my very first podcasts, I told you we have a caste system in public schools. And that's what infuriates me, is the caste system. We don't have equal opportunity schools. Our kids are not sent to the schools that Obama's kids are sent to, nor does he even lobby for such a thing. I mean, you'll notice you never hear that come out of anyone's mouth. There's no elitist that ever says, you know, I want for your kids the kind of education that my kids have. You know why they don't say that? Because they don't. They don't want that. They want their kids in charge of you. And I'm sorry. It's just the truth, dadgummit. All right, so let's see. I have about 5 minutes left here. Let me see if there's other information that's pertinent in here. Oh, yeah, Victor Cousins, the French ambassador. He brought that to France. Oh, this is interesting. In America, the guy who really promoted the Prussian system was Calvin Stowe, the father of Harriet Beecher Stowe, who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. And he actually wrote this really widely distributed report on Prussian schooling and how great it was and the discipline and just how, you know, how great it was. And that was in Ohio, but his report was distributed. He mailed out 10,000, think of that in the 1800s, 10,000 copies. And the legislators of Massachusetts, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Virginia reprinted and distributed it. So, you know, we think we have the internet. Oh, that's mass communication. Hey, this was mass communication. People passed stuff around then. So his ideas, they got around. All right. Okay. Other things that they praised about the Volksschulen schools, that's the plebeian schools, were the mild, listen to this, y'all, Pestalozzian discipline. Now, I don't know if y'all know it, but a schoolmaster, I don't know if you remember seeing Ichabod Crane, that little Disney Legend of Sleepy Hollow, a schoolmaster could beat the tar out of kids. What? Before this. But now, you know, how all the parents complain. This is, y'all, this is what I'm trying to say. What's happening now is what happened then. It's all connected. It's only been 100 years. That's not a lot in the course of history. We have to understand where this stuff came from. This is not American. This is not American. This is not, this is a Hitlerian, it's a Nazi way of thinking. Isn't that funny? Because you'd think beating the crud out of kids was a Nazi way of thinking, but no, not necessarily. It was a way of placating. So Pestalozzi had this very mild discipline. He grouped the children by age. Think of it. Why is that bad? Because you're capping knowledge. One room schoolhouse is what we had in America. Much better. Elevated the standards for all children. He had multiple layers of supervision and selective training for teachers. We can't even imagine what school would be like without that. Multiple layers of supervision. You have your administrators, your superintendents, your principals, your assistant, your vice principal. You have your teachers, your all that. Unknown heretofore, unknown before this. You had the school board and you had the teacher. And that was it. It was the people in charge of the teacher. And I'm being simplistic. I'm not saying that's the way it was everywhere. That's the way it was mostly. And selective training for teachers. Well, at this point, there were just normal schools, was my understanding, where you went and got a liberal arts education and then you were fit to teach. Well, now we have to have selective training. And okay, there's one more thing he points out. And I think, I don't know if I've talked about this on a podcast yet or not. Yes, I've read it in the Wundtian podcast. Whole thousands of young Americans were going to Germany to study because everybody loved the system. Well, what did they do? They brought it back here. And he says that the Prussian outlook leveraged a gradual takeover of American mentality. For a century, Germany was at the center of everything civilized. We loved German scientific procedure, Wundtian psychology, all of these things. We looked at it as a utopia. Of course, this was, you know, right before Hitler. But for like 100 years, we just sort of worshipped them. Wow. Oh, and this is interesting. It talks about the environment in Prussia and how the streets were made to run straight. Town buildings and traffic were state approved and regulated. Attempts were made to cleanse society of irregular elements like beggars, vagrants, and gypsies. The entire community was subjected to fire drills. Oh, no, excuse me, collective discipline. Much like a modern fire drill in high school or a silent passing in between class periods. You see, all those things are very controlling. There's someone in charge and you must obey them. That's why we say school is like prison, because it is like prison, but it doesn't have to be. And it wasn't always like prison. You've got to help yourself get out of this mindset because you grew up in it. You don't understand anything else. Education doesn't have to be like prison. Okay. Prior to 1870, the only countries where everyone was literate were Prussia, Nordic Scandinavia, and the United States. Interesting. Despite all projects of the Enlightenment, of Napoleon, of the parliaments in England and Belgium, and the revolutionaries like Cavour, the vast majority of Europeans could neither read nor write. Okay, and he's going to go on and talk about the influence of steam and coal. He talks about Unitarians and how much they influenced mass education and how, which is interesting because, you know, Unitarians really aren't Christian. They're sort of just like deists. So that's interesting. But then he's talking about Horace Mann and how he was a Unitarian, but so many of the Baptists and Presbyterians got on board with him because they were afraid of Catholic immigrants coming in. And they wanted a school that would sort of indoctrinate those kids into statism. And that's just what we got. Okay, and it just goes on to give some more reports. Like, Mann went and visited the Prussian schools, but school was out at the time. But he wrote back about how wonderful they were, but he never really actually saw anything. I think that's so funny. All right. Oh, so interesting. Oh, it says that there's a book called The Life and Work of the Citizen. In 1935, it was written and published from University of Chicago's Experimental High School. And Howard C. Hill wrote it. And the pre-publication edition is decorated with the fascist symbols of the fascist movement, an emblem binding government and corporation together as one entity. In the title page of this textbook are four cartoon hands symbolizing law, order, science, and the trades, interlocked to form a perfect swastika. Wow. The Prussian connection had entrenched itself deep into the vitals of American institutional schooling by then. So I could not find that image online anywhere, but boy, if you can come up with a copy of the pre-publication edition in 1935 of the University of Chicago by Howard C. Hill, The Life and Work of the Citizen, with the swastika hands, I'll pay a high price for that. I'd love to have that. So if you can find it, send it on over to me. I'll pay you for it. Anyway, all right, well, I've got to wrap it up now because, gosh, it's getting late. So I will talk at you next time, and we'll see if we can't cover some more material that will help enlighten you as to why we have some serious problems. Okay, that's all. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Corduroys, oh, summertime.